with this study on the deceptive advertising, we wanted to show people different levels of deceptive advertisements and measure what was going on in the brain as people were viewing advertisements that were very believable, moderately deceptive, and highly deceptive, or essentially very extreme that couldn't be possible. And we're looking at the differences in brain function between those three different types of ads. So we can essentially create contrasts or comparisons of one category to the other. And what we saw is a multi-stage process. In the first stage, there is activation in a region called the precuneus, and this has to do with that filtering of the highly believable versus the very unbelievable advertisement claims. In the second stage, once the really extreme claims have essentially been filtered out, then the inferior parietal lobe essentially does this mental product testing. Can this possibly be true based on what I know? It's almost a simulation about what the product would do and its benefit. It's during that second stage that when we're able to devote mental resources to thinking about the product claim and that mental simulation, that we can say, based on what I know about this product category or this particular product or the claims that it's making, this could or could not be true. So we're able to arrive at some kind of decision about the efficacy of the product based on the function of that inferior parietal lobe.
What about when you're talking about, I don't want to say a lesser intellect, but a child, for example, and we know how advertisements play on children. And then I say as nicely as possible, the average American sometimes is very gullible when it comes to advertisements. Is there a way to smarten them up to this?
While some people may make bad decisions about advertisements, part of that may be because of the lack of mental energy that they're devoting to the deception detection process. And you ask about populations that may not have the same decision-making capabilities. And we know that over the course of the lifespan, a lot of the psychological and neurological processes do change. At some points, decision making is better, for adults compared to children, for example. One of the kind of implications from our work and in pairing with other current consumer research is that people who are have been exposed to more advertisements, who are more familiar with the strategies that marketers use, they're going to be much more able to detect those misleading advertisements and essentially detect what the intention of the marketer is. So that is something that changes over the lifespan. Children, while nowadays are very in tune with, what marketers are trying to do, they haven't been exposed as much to the different potentially misleading intentions that marketers do have.
How much of this idea of crossing neuroscience in with marketing, using, brain scans, is this something new that's relatively new in both research, in terms of an academic setting as well as from a marketing standpoint?
The use of knowledge from neuroscience tools, both in academia and industry, is probably something that will continue. There are firms who are actively engaged in neuroscience research to see how consumers react to product design, to advertising design, to brand names, to brand logos. Basically, trying to test all aspects of the marketing mix in order to see what is most effective. And as more tools become available, as the existing tools become more inexpensive, you're going to see more of it used, more neuroscience methods used more frequently. I think that's an inevitability, and while somewhat scary from a consumer perspective that marketers are getting inside our heads, it can actually be very good, and that products may be designed better. Marketing may be designed in a way that communicates better with the consumer and helps them make a more informed choice. Because consumers aren't really good at telling researchers what it is they're thinking or feeling or why they are buying or aren't buying a product, having a more honest measure of what the reactions are can actually be informative for both sides. From the academic perspective, the real important point is understanding where the shortcomings in the consumer decision-making process may be and identifying those, understanding why it is that consumers are making very poor decisions. And once we understand where in the decision-making process there's some kind of failure or some kind of shortcoming, then we can help people understand how to make just a small change to their decision-making process that will lead to much better decisions.